Hyacinth's Revenge. Several days later, Papa became gravely ill. At first, he complained of chills, a weary back, and a sore throat, something he waved away as a passing irritation. The next day, he had doubled over on his bed with his hands clutched over his stomach, and Mama and Sebastian had to send for a doctor. Fever settled over him in a heated cloud. Wufferl and I continued our clavier lessons alone, as quietly as we could. I kept my thoughts to myself and did not dare to share them with my brother. My shattered pendant stayed in the bottom of my dresser. Wufferl never mentioned my moment with Johann. My father never found out. He blamed his illness on the English weather, the fog and the rain. Without his making arrangements and setting up meetings, several more of our performances were cancelled. We were forced to dig into the money we had earned in Germany. This only deepened Papa's frustration, which in turn seemed to worsen his state. I found myself lingering outside my parents' bedchamber, watching my mother wringing out a towel to place on my father's head. I would stare at his pale, sickly face and silently will him back to health. My brother, still reluctant to talk to me, would quietly ask me how Papa was doing. I never knew what to say. Our practice sessions felt strange without his shadow towering beside us. After several weeks of little progress and performance cancellations, Mama finally moved us to the English countryside outside of London, to a small Georgian house on Ebury Row, so that Papa could recover in peace. The house was plain but spacious, and when we first arrived there, I looked out of the carriage window to admire the pastures and estates. On our first day, Mama requested our clavier be pushed to a corner and covered with a sheet of cloth. We were not to play while our father stayed ill. This did not stop Wufferl from composing music. I saw him working at night, jotting down measures into the music notebook that Papa had given him after our Frankfurt tour. One afternoon, I found Wufferl hunched over his writing desk, overlooking the garden, and approached him. He did not speak, but his eyes darted up at me, and I noticed the shift of his little body as he turned himself unconsciously toward me. "May I see what you've written?" I offered. Wufferl did not look up. His hand continued to scribble a fluid line of notes on the page.
"After I've finished," he said at last, "I am nearly done with my symphony."
It was a response. My heart lifted slightly at that. He had not spoken to me like this since the incident at the chateau. Perhaps Papa's illness has finally softened the grudge between us. I waited. When Wufferl finished his page and turned to a new sheet, I tried again. "Tomorrow I am going to explore around the house and walk in the garden. Will you come with me?"
Wufferl said nothing. I looked over his shoulder this time so that I could see the measures he wrote out. The symphony was light and fluid, with the same liveliness I remembered from its first pages, which I had seen some time ago. I read my way silently down the page, picturing the harmony in my mind. My eyes settled on the last measure Wufferl had written down. It was a chord. Three notes played together with no separations. "That does not belong," I said automatically, without thinking. Wufferl frowned. I saw his eyes jump to the same chord, even though I had not pointed anything out.
"You're right," he replied. "It doesn't quite fit."
His agreement surprised me. I reached over, put my finger down on the paper, and drew three invisible notes. It was the same chord, separated out, so that each note came after the other.
"This would be better," I said quietly.
Wufferl looked at the paper for a long moment. He dipped his quill back into its inkwell, and then crossed out the old chord and replaced it with mine. I watched him carefully as he wrote, expecting to hear an edge in his voice should he choose to speak to me again. But when he looked at me again,
There was a small smile lingering on his lips, his satisfaction at a good measure of music.
"It is better," he echoed.
Gradually, Wufferl began to ask for my advice again. When I wrote my own music, in secret, he would look on, murmuring in appreciation when he enjoyed a measure. He did not come with me to explore the house, but when I wandered the garden, he would watch me through the window. And sometimes, if he were in a particularly good mood, he would slip his small hand into mine, holding us together until some distraction drew him away again. Papa recovered slowly in his bedroom, with his windows open to the country air and his bedside drawer constantly adorned with fresh flowers from the garden. His mood was better, too, now that we were far away from the chilly London streets. I would hear him laughing with Mama sometimes, or them speaking together in hushed voices on warm afternoons. The sound was as sweet as the summer rain. Wufferl had been in good health, too. His cheeks were round and rosy, and his childish giggles rang through the house. As we were still forbidden from touching the clavier, we spent most of our days playing together. I invented musical games to humor him, and hid trinkets all over the house that he would then have to find. One day, Wufferl dragged Sebastian into our room and begged him to draw us a map of the kingdom. I listened in surprise. The rift between Wufferl and me had been because of the kingdom. And yet, now, he was asking for it to be drawn as a map. Sebastian did, and my brother laughed and clapped his hands in delight at the funny little boxes he would draw for us, his crooked castle on the hill and squiggly trees. I looked on, amused but uneasy at my brother's enthusiasm. The kingdom did not look so powerful or frightening on paper. My brother was well. My father's health was slowly returning. And as I watched Sebastian amuse Wulfril, I began to wonder whether, perhaps, the kingdom had truly been nothing more than a fairy tale. It was easy to think so here, in this rose-scented house soaked in sunlight. I had not seen Hyacinth since the chateau. Wufferl did not have any more nightmares. Maybe he had left us entirely. I lay awake at night, trying to make sense of it. It had been so long, I began to hope that perhaps Hyacinth had forgotten about my betrayal and wouldn't seek revenge for the way I'd turned away from him. Perhaps he was never real at all. Still, now and then, I'd find myself looking into the shadows of my room and wondering whether I saw a slender figure hiding there. I had completed 3 tasks for the princeling. He had promised if I helped him to grant my wish in return. Was my relationship with Hyacinth really to end this quietly? Was I destined to fade into the air as my brother moved on without me and my father followed him? Would Wulfril turn to me one day and point to some empty corner, whispering to me that Hyacinth had returned, to him alone? By the time Papa recovered enough from his illness to bring us back to the city, winter had set into London, and the days were darker and even colder. It was a bitter contrast to our sun-soaked days in the countryside. Our concerts were adequately attended, but a far cry from our earlier stops. After several more months of disappointing performances, Papa decided that he had had enough of England and arranged for us to leave.
"There is no love for God's music here," he complained to my mother on our carriage ride to the pier at Dover.
"Perhaps there is too much, Leopold," my mother replied. "Herr Johann Christian Bach himself is the Queen's music master."
At that, Papa nodded in bitter agreement. Herr Bach had helped us win an audience before the Royal English Court in the first place. But how were we to compete with the London Master of Music?
"Ugh, Anna," he said with a sigh. "Too many musicians make their living here. We'll go elsewhere. The envoy from The Hague has approached me again. I have already made arrangements with the Duchess of Montmorency."
Mama's expression did not waver, but I could plainly see the disappointment on her face.
"I thought that we would not see the Dutch," she said. "We have been away from Salzburg for so long."
"The Princess Regent Carolina and her brother are anxious to see us,"
Papa replied.
"They wish the children to perform and have requested a bound volume of Wuffrell's compositions ready for the prince's 18th birthday."
"A volume?" my mother asked. "How many?"
"I thought 6 sonatas could be ready for publication as soon as we arrive."
6 sonatas. I could tell that this was no idle guess, but the number the Dutch had asked for, and that Papa had already promised. At Mama's frown, Papa lowered his voice into his affectionate tone.
"Anna," he said, "it will go better than London, I assure you."
"Do you not remember what happened in Prussia?"
"Prussia?"
Papa grimaced and waved a dismissive hand.
"This is different. The Dutch will pay us in guilders, not kisses. Think of it."
He took my mother's hands.
"There will be concerts every night, crowded with patrons, and opera houses and gardens overflowing with people who cannot get their fill of good music. Every noble person will be eager to receive us. Princess Carolina is a great admirer of ours and insisted on our presence."
I looked down at my brother to see him listening quietly and biting his lip, his face intent. He knew as well as I did that it was no use arguing once Papa had made up his mind. The Dutch envoy knew that our London tour had soured in the end, and it was this weakness he sought to exploit by tempting my father to make up for those performances. Besides, I could see the light in Wolfril's eyes, his brightening at the challenge before him, despite his exhaustion. Still, 6 sonatas. Wuffrell had written 2 during our stay in the country. He would happily write 4 more. But in such a short amount of time? We must have dipped farther into our savings than I thought for Papa to agree to such an impossible deadline. Had our landlord, Herr Hagenauer, sent Papa a letter again asking for our rent? "Very well," my mother said, and that was that. So we prepared and packed. Wuffrell began writing in earnest. I'd wake to see him asleep with a quill still in his hand, an unfinished page of music crumpled under his arm. On the day we were to leave, Papa helped the coachman drag our things into the boot and paid the last of our fees to the innkeeper. He was in a good mood this morning, humming a strange tune under his breath that I didn't recognize. I kept my face turned down and concentrated on checking my trunks and tidying my dress, tying my new hat securely with a veil. I watched my father as we rode. He talked in a low voice to my mother, trying to convince her that the payment the Dutch offered was well worth what they asked.
"That is because what others cannot do, Wuffrell can," he said, turning to my brother with a rare smile. "It is the miracle they seek, and you are it."
I waited for Papa's glance to fall on me too, to include me in his good mood and the miracle that was our family. But he ignored me and went back to his conversation with Mama. I swallowed and looked out the window. We rested, spent the night at an inn, and crossed the channel the following day. When our carriage finally clattered over a bridge overlooking one of the Hague's canals, and we looked out to see a towering opera house crowded with people, Papa exclaimed how right we were to have come here, how glad he was for all of us. On our first night in the Hague, Wuffrell snuggled close to me in bed. "What's wrong?" I asked him. He shook his head and refused to lift his head. "I'm afraid of my nightmares," he whispered. As he said it, something shifted in the dark corners of the room. When I stirred the next morning, hazy with the fog of unremembered dreams, Papa was already bustling about, tugging on his coat while Mama adjusted his collar.
"It is the perfect gift," he was saying to her. I sat up in bed and watched as my father set a book on the room's desk and then hurry out the door. Mama followed behind him. My eyes went back to the book. Vaguely, I remembered that Papa was planning to bind Wolfril's music for the prince and princess into a volume. I blinked, surprised to see the book already finished. Wolfril had been writing non-stop, but I thought I knew how much he had finished and how much more he had yet to go. Had he really already composed enough for the book? The volume seemed a good thickness. Papa must have included some of my brother's older works in an attempt to fill it. Out of curiosity, I rose from the bed and went over to the writing desk to peek at the volume before Papa and Mama returned. Behind me, Wolfril continued to sleep. With delicate fingers, I ran a hand across the front of the book and then opened its cover. At first, I didn't understand what I was seeing. It was like a mirror, except in a sheet of black notes. I knew these notes. Every single one. I flipped the first page, then the next, faster and faster. I closed my eyes, dizzy, expecting to wake up out of this dream and be back in my bed. But when I opened my eyes, the volume was still here in my hand. My music was still staring back up at me. My music. Not Wolfril's. Mine. My hands were shaking so hard now that I feared I would tear the fine paper. I let out a gasped sob and took a step back, stumbling so that my legs gave way, and sat on the floor with my dress spilled in a circle around me. In the corner, Wolfril stirred slightly in bed and rubbed his face sleepily.
"Nonerl," he murmured. "What is it?"
I didn't answer. I didn't understand. How could this possibly have happened? I looked in a daze around the room, then pushed myself up and rushed to my trunk. I rummaged through it frantically. My clothes, shoes, hair ties all went flying until finally I stared down at an empty bottom. I steadied myself against the trunk. The neat little stack of my folded parchments, all the compositions I'd created and carefully stored away over the past months, they were gone. In bed, Wolfril sat up now, more awake and alarmed at the expression on my face.
"Are you all right?" he said. "You've turned so pale."
The world spun around me.
"Did you tell Papa, Wolfril?" I whispered, the words springing unbidden out of me.
"What?"
Wolfril replied. And when I looked him directly in the eye, he did not blink. He was a picture of confusion, pale from the hurt in my words. His gaze flitted to the mess of my belongings strewn around my trunk.
"Did you tell Papa about my compositions?" I said.
My voice trembled. Understanding suddenly blossomed on my brother's face, followed by horror.
"I would never," he said.
I leaned against my empty drawer. My thoughts spun over and over until I swayed. It couldn't be. It couldn't be. But I forced myself back onto my feet and stumbled over to look at the volume still open on the table. The pages were there. The notes were there, and my compositions were gone from my trunk, stolen away by my father. Or by a princeling. Hyacinth, Hyacinth, Hyacinth! The name tolled like a bell in my thoughts. I'd been so foolish to think that he had somehow stepped quietly out of our lives. Here he was again, flitting his fingers through the air. He had always known where to hit me the hardest, had been waiting to use this against me should I ever turn my back on him. I had given up my end of our bargain. In return, he had taken my wish and given it to my brother instead. This was Hyacinth's revenge, the cruelty he had planned for my punishment. Wolfril called to me again from bed, but I could barely hear him. I paged through each piece in the volume until I reached the end. 6 of my sonatas, with minor changes. They had been published in a bound volume, like I'd always dreamed of, but they did not have my name anywhere on them. Instead, they were signed by Wolfrul. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart had stolen my music.